My name is William Bill Owens III. In this journal, I publish stories of those who've encountered supernatural, paranormal, bizarre, and otherwise unexplainable phenomena, benevolent or malevolent, or benign, and who feel they can't turn anywhere else, but need to be listened to. You may do with this information what you will. Tales from the Shadows, Issue 1. David Bukowski and the Underground Doorway to the Dead Dimension. David Bukowski is rapping a light beat on his floor with his foot. It's a nervous tick, as he explains. And throughout the course of this conversation, save for two occasions where he excuses himself briefly, that tick will cease only a single time. To calm himself, he smokes, too. And once he's got his cigarette, he lifts the pack and produces one for me. I decline. Then I set the recording device and place that on the little table next to my chair and turn it on. "You know what's a fact?" he says. "What's that?" "Started smoking on the same day the foot jitter started." He places the cigarette between his teeth and lights it after a failed attempt, and puffs on it and coughs. "I think that's something. Same damn day." "That has something to do with why I'm here?" He nods a bit.
"Ain't no doubt about that."
I write this down, and without looking up, say, "So, you are an outdoors man, right?"
"Yes, sir. Never was one for cities. The closer I get to nature, the closer I am to God. Why I chose to live out this way."
Nods up and over to the window. From there, a rolling hill can be seen on which this house is built. At the bottom of its slope, it is consumed by woods and surrounded, some miles off, by the eastern Appalachians. Although those can hardly be seen from the living room. He takes a long drag from his cigarette.
"Started hiking when I was, what, 17? 18, maybe. Late high school years, somewhere around there. Loved it, too. Started climbing after that. Diving. Wish I could still get out there, do that stuff, but you know how it goes. The march of time. Yes, sir."
Throughout all of this, I notice, but do not mention, the fact that his foot jitter has subsided. Talk of nature calms him. The next topic will not. "And in our phone call, you said it was caving, right? I think I'm quoting you as saying that that was your final frontier." The jitters resume.
"Ah, yeah. I was around 27, 28, realized I didn't just like the outdoors for the sake of it. I like the thrill, too, you know. Not danger, really, but,
He trails off, swirls his hand in the air while he struggles to find the wording. "The adrenaline rush?" He snaps his fingers.
"The adrenaline rush, yes. Excitement, a little danger, I guess."
He laughs. I smile. "So how experienced were you when it happened?"
"I'm an intermediate. I'd be doing spelunking for a year or two at the time, give or take, mostly in big safe places, you know. Carlsbad, National Bridge, places folks go to a lot. Realized that novelty wore off after a while. It was fun, but still,
but not thrilling."
"Bingo. Can't be properly thrilled if it's been done before. Well, I see it anyway."
He takes a long drag that finishes the cigarette, and without hesitation, produces and lights and starts on a second. By the time our talk is concluded, he'll have finished what he has left of the pack.
"Thirsty?"
he says.
"Got some Bukowski brew in the fridge."
"You brew your own beer?"
"It keeps me busy."
He doesn't wait for my response. He gets up with a cigarette in his teeth and he moves into the kitchen. A moment later, he's back with two glasses filled with a thick stout. I take a sip. And hold in a retch. And place it down. He downs a third of his glass in a single gulp.
"Trying to get to the local farmer's market, sell this stuff, but all sorts of licensing and shit I gotta work on, though."
I steer the conversation back to the matter at hand. "So you said it can't be thrilling if it's done. So I'm guessing you started exploring caves that were not as well known."
"Few of them were named. Most of them weren't. Means I and whoever it was I was with got to name them, which was a neat privilege. Usually just combined our names to make it easy.
Bukowski Adams, Bukowski Baldwin, Francis Pucker. Most of them were small things, too. Little 1-2 chamber holes on the mountainside. Tall enough to crouch in, maybe deep enough to lose sunlight. Not much bigger than that.
There was a pause before he adds,
then there was Baldwin Bukowski.
And his foot jitter begins again, and with speed. When he takes another sip of his beer, this causes him to spill a bit of it on his shirt. He dabs lazily at the stain. Under his breath, he mumbles,
the hell?
Baldwin Bukowski, I said. That one on a map? He shakes his head, no.
And I hope it stays that way.
So, how'd you find it?
My guide was a caving vet named John Baldwin. Met up with him on a previous hike. He tells me about this place he'd found. All in his lonesome, said he hadn't had a chance to explore the place yet. At least not past the second chamber or so, and he invites me. And let me tell you this, a place that's both unexplored and worth exploring. Oh, that's a rare combination indeed, so. So I jumped at the chance. We get there, we park a good mile and a half out, give or take. March up the mountain slope, and there it is. It's a little humble hole between two trees. And squeeze our way in.
Oh, well, I wonder it went under the radar.
As long as it did, anyway. In we go, and like most of the places I'd been in up to that point, it was real damn small. You know, we had to crouch in there, and for a minute I thought I got myself coned or something, like, why the hell did you bring me here? There ain't nothing special about this.
To avoid looking rude, I forced myself to swallow a third of my beer.
Now ready for prime time, you think?
What's that?
A drink. You think I could sell it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. It's real strong. After a pause, I say, so the cave was small?
Oh, well, at first, yeah. That's when he turned on his flashlight and points over to the northwestern side of the cave. Runabouts, and there's a little gap there, a little cut in the rock that you could shimmy through. So he gets to work doing that, starts calling out stuff he sees, you know. Bend your knees around this rock, gotta duck a bit, twist your arm to get past this, stuff like that. Before I get inside, I'm thinking, hey man, you know, I like spelunking for the quiet, the adrenaline, the exploring, but I don't like tight spaces, no sir. If anything, I like nature because it's the opposite of tight spaces. It's wild, free air. Claustrophobia is for high rises.
You never run into any tight caves?
Well, I had. The ones that weren't well mapped out, where I knew what I was getting into. It was so damn small, you know. That even if it was a little squeezed require, or crawling or something, you could usually see the other side. Usually, that was it. This. Oh, it was just blackness in there. Didn't know how far back it all went.
He finishes his beer and wipes his mouth with the back of his hand.
But I'd already come that far, you know. So I suck it up. I go in. And I'm working real damn hard not to panic, you know. Slow my breathing, try to stay nice and relaxed. And he's calling out obstacles and I'm doing what he says. Get through it just fine. Yeah, I did that. I had to squeeze and duck and twist. But I got through. Can't get much worse.
You might as well keep going at that point. He nods. Finishes his second cigarette and dumps his ashes in an overflowing tray. Then he lights his third.
Went on like that for a while. Place really was bigger than anywhere else I'd been in that hadn't been mapped out.
Longer, at least.
Not so much tall or wide. But it kept going and going. Started losing track of time, losing track of how far in we were. When you're working that hard, boy, it is hard work, let me tell you. Stuff like that just gets away from you.
So, when did things start to go wrong? His foot jitters picked up its pace again.
We found a pond. Eventually we get to a little precipice. Overlooks a big drop-off. Over the side of it is a small pond. Ain't no life in it that I can see. Might not have even been deep enough to dive in, but I fill up my bottle of the pond before we start the descent. And I drink it. And John yells for me not to. Tries to wrestle it out of my hand. I'm confused and struggle back, and down he goes. Into the pond?
Over the precipice.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
There's a beat of silence when he collects his thoughts. And then he says,
"Nasty fall, too. Big slab he was standing on wasn't as stable as it looked. Cracked. Slides, he goes down. I try to lean over to see if I can help him back up.
I go down, too. Along with the rest of the rock."
"How'd you survive?"
"Ain't sure.
I was pretty damn banged up.
Tell you that much."
He bites his cigarette and half turns in his seat and lifts his shirt to reveal a jagged scar that runs nearly the full length of his right side.
"See that?"
he says.
"Cracked 3 ribs. Later found out I had to wear one of them corset things for, like, a few months.
Felt like a real man in that."
Starts to chuckle. Then I say, "What happened to John?" And the laughter dies. And he lowers his shirt.
"Couldn't find him."
He flicks ash in the tray.
"Don't know how long I was out, but when I came to, he was nowhere to be found. Had to dig out of the rubble myself.
Called out for him, searched for him in the mess, you know. See if he was buried.
Nothing. Meant he'd wandered off without me.
So I'd be in real pissed off on top of every other damn thing."
"Did you look for him?" He shrugged.
"At that point, I didn't give a damn what happened to the man. I wanted to find a way out."
He began a fresh cigarette, his 4th by my count. And he says,
"So I just wandered off into the cave. Didn't know where I was going. Didn't know if there was another exit, you know. But it's not like there was any way out from where I was. So off I went. Walked for, God, I don't know how long. Hours and hours, easily."
"Man, I can't imagine you were equipped for that."
"Had 2 granola bars. Ate those. Had a bit of trail mix. Ate that. Finished my water. Never did find another pond to fill it in. Luckily, the place opened up after that, though. Tight corridors became hallways. Little rooms you couldn't stand in without banging your head. They're not chambers. You know, ones you can hear your echo in. I couldn't find John for the life of me. At least not before things started getting weird."
"In what way?" He relights his cigarette, gives me a smug side look as he does it, and says,
"Found writing."
I blink. "You saw writing? Is that what you said?"
"Yes, sir."
"In English?" He shakes his head no.
"Wasn't any language I could identify, you know. It looked old, ancient even. Almost like those, Egyptian, cuneiform things. Like,
Hieroglyphics." "What?" "Egyptians wrote in hieroglyphics. Picture words. Cuneiforms was Sumerian."
"Well, whatever it was bizarre. Somehow, and this is gonna sound insane, I didn't know what the writing said. Like, in a translatable way, but I got the gist of it. I don't know how. Doesn't make any sense."
"What was the gist?" All at once, he became visibly distressed. He fidgets and adjusts himself in his seat. Then he says,
"Wasn't specific. Wasn't like it was describing death or and mayhem or anything like that. It was like, here, I'll put it this way. You know, when you're a kid and you're afraid of the dark, but you don't know why. See that, like an open closet at night, or you look down in the basement from the top of the stairs or something. You're 6, 8 years old, what do?
You picture the boogeyman."
"Right. Right, but why?"
I shrugged. "I would imagine because the brain wants to put a face on what it doesn't know, so it fills in the blanks with possibilities that reflect your emotional state. Tries to justify the fear."
"Good. Yeah, good. I get rid of all that. Strip away the zombies, strip away the vampires, you know, the boogeyman. What do you have? What's left behind it all?"
"Naked, contextless, faceless dread, I guess." He snaps his fingers and leans back in his seat.
"Exactly. I didn't read those words. I didn't even look at them directly, but when When I was running through the cave, it was like they were just putting exactly that shit in my brain somehow. Like, it cut out the middleman, you know, took over, took out the reading, took out the interpreting the words, took out the ideas behind the words. They're just words covering the floor, the walls, the ceilings, all of it. And there's that shit in my head. How do you put it? Naked? Dread?
I nodded. Like it quantified death, fear. I found a way to invoke that in you without you having to read it. That's fascinating.
Fascinating to hear about, maybe. Be in there, it'll drive you mad, and I'll tell you what.
He says.
At that point, it was less about escaping the cave, you know, more about escaping the words. It was torture, Bill. Truly it was. Mental torture. Psychological torture. Spiritual, whatever you want to call it. I'd have much rather died alone, starved to death, or suffocated in some godforsaken corner of the damn cave. And have to keep on enduring it. It's getting worse as I went, too.
Wait, how so exactly? He pats out the ash.
Cave got darker as I went in. Don't know how. And like there'd been sunlight for as many hours or days as it had been, but still, got darker and darker. Flashlight was less and less effective. I thought the batteries were dying, so I fumbled around and swapped them out with my reserve pair. Didn't help. Couldn't see my hand in front of my face, you know, that kind of darkness. It's right up in there in your bones. Intimate. The words. I don't know. Got more and more aware of them and what they were putting in here.
He taps his temple with his right hand.
Then other shit starts happening.
He clears his throat, and this rolls over into a whopping cough. He puts it out with a swig of beer.
He says, I started leaving the cave.
I don't follow.
I was in the cave and it got darker, and then, even though I could still feel the walls of the cave, the rock, floor, you know, I started seeing other stuff just laying on top of it, like another dimension. Can't explain it any more than the words, but that's the feeling I got. Like I was in the cave. A part of me was somewhere else.
What did this new place look like?
Like a hallway. Smooth surfaces, smooth walls, smooth floor. I know it weren't part of the cave, because there's one thing you learn spending your life outdoors. It's that nature doesn't make right angle, you know? And if by some act of God it does, she herself doesn't make multiple ones all right next to each other. No, this place was man-built. Or something built.
After dragging a cigarette, he adds, nonchalantly, as if it was the most minor detail.
There are pictures on the walls.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Of? He sets the cigarette in his teeth and says,
it was the cuneiform from before, but
hieroglyphics.
Hieroglyphics, whatever. But they were alive, moving, writhing, squirming. I felt like somehow they had depth to them, and I realized that, you know, wherever I was, this new plane, this new dimension, it was a much realer existence than the one that we're in now. Everything was so much deeper, so much more real. Everything here, you know.
He picks up his empty glass and turns it over in his hands without purpose.
It's like it's just a thin summary of that place. Somehow it stumbled right on through, I guess you call it the veil. I was in the real world, the one behind the illusion. I don't know.
Did this more real version of the hieroglyphics provide you any insight into their nature? Any deeper understanding beyond an emotional response?
Yeah, sure. Sure they did. That dread started getting its own context a little bit, something still alien, you know, but it started feeling more focused. And the further down the hallway I went, the more focused it got.
He put the glass down and stared at it for a bit, lost in thought, in his own wordless musings. Then he said,
anyway, finally got to the end of the hallway. Words were behind me, guess they'd serve their purpose or whatever, and at the end, there was a staircase. Massive. My mighty flight of stairs stretched off to the left and right as far as I could see. Stretched down so far there wasn't nothing but blackness there. Don't know what was at the bottom, don't know if anything was at the bottom, really. but I saw what was in the middle of that place.
After an extended pause in which he assembles the words to produce, and during which the tap-tap-tapping of his foot got faster, he said,
It was a creature, a demon or something, maybe worse. Oh God, it was a mighty massive thing, size of a planet, it felt like, just watching me from the mist, from the shadows, and I couldn't get away from it. I couldn't turn around. No matter where in the cave I went, every single fucking step it brought me closer to it. I realized, this was still in the cave. No matter where I ran to in this place, it had no effect on where I was in this real world. Like some kind of a computer game character. You can move around in that fake world all you want, but you ain't never going to leave the living room.
What did it look like? The creature, I mean.
Didn't look like anything. Nothing that's ever been alive here, I'll tell you that much. It was... God, it was like a reptile, maybe just a little bit. Just a vaguely reptilian thing, vaguely deer-like too, and shaped like a jellyfish almost, since it didn't have, a head or arms or anything you recognize as body parts. It was just this hideous mass. It's bigger than the moon and covered in a rot and what looked like tree bark and bones. I saw an old rock formation dangling from it too.
He gestured to his chin and his arms as if something was hanging from them.
Stalactites and stalagmites, all the stuff you heard of in school, dangling pillars of rock, were a part of this thing or an extension of it. I don't know, but it was old, ancient, not like Roman ancient, though, that truly otherworldly before time itself, kind of ancient.
He paused for a bit to collect himself. Then he says,
And then it spoke to me, Bill.
The demon spoke to you. He put his head in his hands, and he rocked back and forth with trembles. This time his whole body joins in, and he nodded.
It spoke the same language as the words. I couldn't translate it for you if I tried. It was human language, I don't know. Any better or worse, it's just different. We explain this world, the fake world, we got a word for cup, beer, TV.
He nods at his television.
That language explains the essence, the deep, the true, naked reality behind the veil, and somehow I knew what it meant when it spoke.
What did it mean? A tear rolled down his cheek, and he groaned pitifully.
It was calling me, Bill. I wasn't saying my name, but it was calling me. The me behind the skin, the me behind the flesh, the bones.
God,
it was like 1,000 dead voices all at once just singing in this rolling, echoing, gravelly fucking dead language. And then I was with it, next to it, part of it. I looked behind me, I saw the stairs way off, like as far as the sun is from Earth. I don't know how long it took me to get there. I don't know if time and space even had any meaning in this place at all. I was just getting closer to it. Somehow, for some reason, I didn't care. I wasn't scared. We weren't upset or happy or anything. It was me, without the flesh or emotions. Everything was stripped away. I was just a floating, naked soul.
What happened when you reached it?
I started coming back a bit, weirdly. So I started getting feelings like this ain't right. Something's wrong and this ain't real. Can't be, yada yada. Started just a little trickle of normal thoughts, like I was still there somewhere, fighting to get out. And I started to rest and it pulls me in closer and I fight some more. But now...
By now, David is staring off at nowhere in particular at all. He is every inch as thoroughly wrapped up in this tale as I am.
And it says something like blood or sacrifice or something. It's the closest English word for what it meant. Maybe it was like the same thing in that language, I don't know, but I got the impression I could only escape if I gave it life.
If you gave it life? Like, allowed it to kill you, or...
That or some other life.
There was a brief pause before he adds,
and I realized that, you know, that's what this thing was. This place wasn't the reality behind the illusion at all, no. It was the opposite of reality. And this thing is the opposite of life. That's the only way I could describe it, is the opposite of life. This thing on the other side. And only after realizing that and friggin' fighting like hell did it start to lose its grip on me. And the cave started to come back and light and... Oh, God.
He starts to break down, but manages.
I didn't mean to do it. I didn't know. I didn't know. God. Oh, God, no, no, no.
I sit up straight. What? Do what? After a moment, he holds up his trembling hands as if he hasn't washed them in all these years of the stains of blood.
It was John.
He says.
It was. He'd been calling me and I couldn't. I didn't know. I didn't.
John was the demon? He shook his head.
No, no, no. When I came out of that damn place, I was back up by the pond and John was... He was dead. He was beaten into the ground, dead. Broken nose, bloody, bruised, disemboweled. My hands hurt and I knew. I just knew. It hadn't been hours or days or weeks or however long. We hadn't even fallen over the edge like I thought. It'd been no time at all. John had been saying no. No, don't drink that. Don't drink the water here. You don't know what's in it. And he grabbed my arm and I beat him to death, Bill. I killed him.
David began weeping again. Heavily. He drops the cigarette and he grabs his head and he bunches up his hair between his fingers and rocks back and forth.
No, 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 no. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't.
Only after a long time has passed... As he sighs loudly and sits back. Then he wipes his nose with the back of his hand, then he grabs the pack and dumps the last cigarette from it into the palm of his hand. This comforts him to a small degree, and he lights it. I say, I'm sorry, David.
Yeah, well, what's done is done, right?
His voice is shaking. But he takes a long drag and he produces a cloud that fills the air above his head and lifts away. Then he pats the ash into the bowl.
Took John's keys after that. Brought a rock down on his head and tossed him over the edge. Found my way out eventually, you know. Drove to the gas station, got a pack, drove back home, called the police, and smoked the whole damn thing while I waited for him. Thought I was going to prison, you know, but when they got there, I told them John died in a caving accident. Tripped and fell right off the edge. Weren't nothing I could do. They said I was in no shape to be a killer, so they let me go. They left me there to stew in my fucking filth and my misery.
He looks at the floor.
I don't know. I don't know if they ever did find him down there. Spent, God, better part of a year, maybe more, waiting someone to find my handprints on his neck, and I'd be getting a knock on the door, but I never did get that knock. And by the time I was able to sleep normally again, live well enough with the nightmares, all the stress had produced this here foot jitter.
He nods down.
And it ain't ever left me since. That was some 20 years back this May.
I consider all this for a time. I finish my beer while we sit in silence. And I say, so, do you think it was the pond water that did it? Induced a hallucination? Made you attack John? He snorts.
Yeah, I thought about that. Now how did I get the broken ribs?
So it wasn't an illusion at all, then?
Maybe not.
I do have to ask, though. I got the impression that you'd bottled this up for a while. So why tell me now?
Because I'm almost out of time. Like you said earlier, the march of time, that I get it off my chest before I went to the deep.
Hey, Blink. You think you're gonna go back to that place?
No, Bill. Been seeing the place real vivid like in my dreams lately, you know?
He pats the last of the ash into the bowl and laces together his fingers and places his hand across his stomach.
Fact of the matter is, it's where we all go to at the end. To join our bones with the pit.